Good evening.
Let's turn tonight to Matthew chapter 25. Matthew 25, and let's ask the question, what if I'm not ready? What if I'm not ready for the end of the world, for the end of time and the coming of Jesus? I have read where when Alexander Campbell would lay siege of a city, he would light a lantern, and the lantern would be lighted day and night. And he would send word to the city, as long as the lantern is lighted, you have an opportunity to turn to us. When the light goes out, all hope is gone. We have something similar to that in Matthew chapter 25, where we find another one of these tremendous stories of Jesus. Well, we know it as the parable of the 10 virgins. And it in reality is the second of twin parables. And it's in a series of parables or stories that Jesus told. But these twin parables were designed to get mankind to think, well, really, to get Jesus' disciples to think about the end of time and whether or not they were ready. If we were to look at the story, it's found itself in Matthew 25, verses 1 to 13. We were to put that into its surrounding verses and see the setting just like the one we studied last Sunday night, the parable of the faithful servant. This particular story is in a series of verses or a setting where Jesus is in communication with a very small group of people, His disciples. If we went back to Matthew chapter 23, verse 37, through verse 39, in the setting of this story, we see that Jesus had made some predictions. He had predicted the end of the city of Jerusalem. Oh, Jerusalem, Jerusalem, the one who kills the prophets and stones those who are sent to her. How often I wanted to gather your children together, as a hen gathers her chicks under her wings, but you were not willing. See, your house is left to you desolate. He's predicting a desolate nature, the destruction of Jerusalem. Well, in chapter 25, verse 24, verse 1, Jesus went out and departed from the temple, and his disciples came to him, came to show him the buildings of the temple. And Jesus said to them, and he just kind of capitalizes on that prediction again. Do you not see all these things? What things? The temple and the buildings of the temple. The things that the apostles were showing Jesus. He said, do you not see all these things? Assuredly, I say to you, not one stone shall be left here upon another that shall not be thrown down. And so he's predicting the fall of Jerusalem as a city and even the destruction of their church building, if you please, their Jewish temple. Well, you can imagine how startled the apostles must have been at those predictions. Jerusalem was their capital, their civil capital. It was their religious center. And so they come to Jesus with two questions, and they have a misunderstanding. As he sat on the Mount of Olives, chapter 24, verse 3, the disciples came to him privately saying, now this is a 1-on-12 home Bible study with Jesus. They came to him privately saying, tell us, question one, when will these things be? When is Jerusalem going to fall? Question number two, what will be the sign of your coming? What can we look for that will point to this happening? But then the misunderstanding, they thought he was talking about his coming at the end of time. What will be the sign of your coming and of the end of the age? And so with verse 4, he begins to respond to those questions and to their misunderstanding. He talks about the signs that they could look for that would point to the ultimate destruction of Jerusalem. And they would involve things such as false messiahs coming and the geopolitical uprisings that those false messiahs would foster, the wars that those uprisings would result in, and the ground shaking with the army coming, and the pestilence and the famine and the betrayal that would come with wars, and then the desolation that would come when Jerusalem was totally surrounded by her enemy, and then the eagles, literally the buzzards, flying over the city, giving indication of the fact the end is nigh. And then he answered their time question and told them in chapter 24, verse 34, that it was going to happen in their generation, yes, in their lifetime. But remember, they asked the questions thinking he was talking about the end of time. And so in chapter 24 of Matthew, verse 36, Jesus began to address that misunderstanding. He said, but of that day, that is the end of time, but of that the day, literally, and hour, no one knows, not even the angels of heaven, but my Father only. He goes on to say that just like the coming of the flood waters in Noah's day, the end of time will be unexpectedly, will come unexpectedly. And just as a thief that comes in and pilfers the goods of someone that is gone, the end of time will come suddenly. But you don't know when. And that's the setting that sets the tone for this parable of who's a faithful servant. And then this parable of the five foolish virgins. As far as the setting is go, we've seen that. What about the significance of these stories? Again, Jesus tells us, told his disciples, we don't know when the end of time will be. Therefore, and this is the point that he's trying to make, with the parable of the faithful servant and the parable of the ten virgins. Verse 42 of chapter 24, watch. You don't know when it's going to be. Watch, for you do not know what hour your Lord is coming. Verse 44, therefore you also be ready, for the Son of Man is coming in an hour you do not expect. And so the significance of these stories is this. Jerusalem is going to fall, and you can see things beginning to develop that will point to its end. And by the way, that's going to happen in your lifetime. But the end of time, nobody knows when that's going to happen. And because of that, the significance of these upcoming parables, you better watch and be ready. Because of that, you better be ready, because it's going to come when you least expect it. You better be ready. What if I'm not? In Matthew 24, verse 45, knowing that the end of time is something that we can't pinpoint, though many people have tried, and many predictions have been made unsuccessfully, Jesus said, who then is a faithful and wise servant? Hey, who will be ready? And from that question, he begins twin parables. And the first parable, he answers the question, who is a faithful servant? We discussed that last Sunday night. And in short, a faithful servant is one who does what his master tells them. He does what his master tells him, the way his master says, and he continues to do that until his master comes. Now, that's a faithful servant. But who is a faithful and wise servant? And that's where the story of the ten virgins comes in. Because Jesus tells us there were ten virgins, five were wise and five were foolish. Who then is a faithful and wise servant? Well, a faithful servant is, and he tells this first story. A wise servant is, and he tells the story of our interest tonight. Let's read Matthew 25, verses 1 to 13 together, and let's ask this question. This is a story designed to encourage us to be ready for the end of time. Before we read it, I just feel like we need to make this statement. This story was told to people who were already following Jesus. This story was told to people who had already committed themselves to Jesus. You go back to Matthew 24, verse 3, and you'll see who Jesus address this particular story to? He was speaking to his apostles. These were men that were preachers. These were miracle workers. These were men that had given 3 years of their lives to a commitment to Jesus. And he's telling this story about the 10 virgins to drive home the point. Now you better watch, because you don't know when I'm coming. And you better be ready, because you don't know when I'm coming. You see, even when I'm following Jesus, I can't slack up. Even though I have committed myself to Jesus, I can't cease giving attention to my attitudes, my commitment, my day-to-day walk with the Lord. I must constantly be ready myself. Yes, our God is a God of grace. Do not forget that. But at the same time, the God of grace expects my all. Let's read this passage. Let's contemplate this idea of what if I'm not ready? Let's don't read this in view of the idea, well, what if this person is not ready because they've never been baptized? No, let's read this and ask, what if I'm not ready as someone that has been baptized, that has been following Jesus? What if I'm not ready? Are you ready? What if you're not? The kingdom of heaven shall be likened to 10 virgins. A virgin was a young lady. A young lady that had never married. Perhaps a young lady that had never married but had even been betrothed for a year. She was a young lady that had never known man in a biblical sense. Never had sex. I could, just as a sidebar, ask, could Jesus be talking about you? If you're not married, could he be including you as one of these 10? And will your husband marry a virgin? Well, that's an excellent question to contemplate, but one for a different lesson. The kingdom of heaven shall be likened to 10 women who had never sexually known a man, who took their lamps and went out to meet the bridegroom. Now let's take pause for a moment and step into the cultural background. Weddings in Bible days had three phases. I like to call it the ABCs of Bible weddings. A, the arrangement. This is when the mama and daddy of a little boy would sit down with the mama and daddy of a little girl, and they would make a financial arrangement for the little girl to become the wife of the little boy. And that arrangement was binding until the little boy and the little girl became of marital age. It was a lot younger in Bible times than it is in our times. Early teens, if not mid-teens. Are you ready for your 15-year-old son to become a husband? Are you ready for your 13-year-old daughter to become a wife? Well, no, that's not our culture, but it was Bible culture. So you had this arrangement. Now, when they became of age, the young lady had the opportunity to opt out of the arrangement. You made that arrangement, but I don't want to marry that boy. He's been pulling my hair at school ever since we were in kindergarten. He's been mean to me, and I don't want to marry him. And so she could opt out of the arrangement, and it was over. But if she agreed, then you come to phase number two, A, B, C. A, the arrangement. B, the betrothal. And this betrothal was the time of formal engagement. We see our ladies come in and, how are you? And they do this number, and what are they saying? What are they telling you? I got a ring. Look here. I got a ring because I got a guy. Well, have you set a date? No. Probably in about 24 to 36 months. We want to get out of school and so forth, and then we will set our date. That's not the way they did it in Bible times. They would begin a betrothal or engagement period. And it would last for 1 year. And during that 1 year, they were husband and wife. They didn't sleep together. They didn't live together. She remained a virgin. He remained a virgin. But they were betrothed, and they were viewed in society as husband and wife. You remember Matthew chapter 1. The birth of Jesus came on this wise. When Mary was betrothed to Joseph, before they came together, that is, before they slept together as man and woman, she was found with child out of the Holy Spirit. An angel comes to Joseph and says, "Fear not to take unto thee Mary." And how does he describe her? "Thy wife." She's his wife. Because they're in this year of betrothal. They're engaged. Then you come to phase number 3. A, the arrangement. B, the year-long betrothal. C, the canopy. Or if you wish, the ceremony. And this is when all the festivities of a wedding began and take place. The bridegroom, with the friends of the bridegroom, would leave his house. And they would march all the way through the city's streets, and they would begin to make their way to the bride's house where she lived with her mom and her daddy. And there she would be made ready. If we took the time to read from Isaiah and read from Jeremiah, we would see that the groom was adorned in special clothing. He was given a crown and he was treated as royalty. He was a king. Some of the groomsmen that would go with him would carry swords and they would act like his royal bodyguard. Other groomsmen and friends of the groom that accompanied him would have drums and instruments, and they would play all these instruments as they marched through the streets, beginning the festivities of a wedding. And they would make their way to the bride's mama and daddy's house where she herself was ready. And she would be adorned in special clothing and in jewels. And you'll remember, for example, when Jesus told the story of a woman that lost one of her silver coins. This was a silver coin that was a part of her wedding attire. And so she wanted to find it. And so she would be adorned and she would be made ready for the groom to come and pick her up, and she would become the queen. And she, with her attendants, would meet the bridegroom with his attendants, and then all together they would march under a lighted torch through the city's streets, and they would go back to the groom's house. The door would be shut and locked, and they would have a wonderful ceremony. The couple would sit under a canopy, and they would be treated as a king and a queen. And all friends would come and they would share little poems, squibs, give gifts, read scripture, extend blessings. And so it was through the feast. And then at the appropriate time, the husband and the wife would make themselves absent. As the wedding feast continued, They would make themselves absent and they would seal their union physically. The husband would come out with a sign of the fact that his wife indeed was a virgin when they sealed their union physically. And the wedding feast would proceed for an entire week. Now, with that cultural background in mind, we come back to Matthew 25, where we see 10 virgins who took their lamps and went out to meet the bridegroom. 5 of them were wise. Literally, they continued to be wise. They were constantly making sure that everything was proper. 5 were foolish. They didn't do the same. Those who were foolish took their lamps and took no oil with them, but the wise took oil in their vessels with their lamps. But while the bridegroom was continually delayed. Now here they are, they're with the bride. Here they are, they've helped the bride get ready. But the guy's just not coming. Isn't that like a guy, ladies? I mean, you know, he tells you he's going to be there at 6 o'clock and he gets there at 6:30. So here's the guy, and he's not coming. He's constantly delayed. And so as they're waiting for the bridegroom and his attendants, they go to sleep. They slumbered. And they continued to sleep. They didn't just doze. It wasn't just a power nap. They went down deep. They slept. And at midnight, a cry was heard. Literally, it was and it continued to be heard. It wasn't this, bridegroom's coming. Huh? What? But no, there was a commotion. There was a bunch of racket and noise. The bridegroom's coming. The bridegroom's coming. And all of the festivities that are accompanied with the procession of leaving the bridegroom's house and going to the bride's house. All of that racket is making its way through the streets, yes, at midnight. And here they come, and all of that noise wakes up the 10 virgins. Then all those virgins, verse 7, arose and trimmed their lamps, literally made beautiful or garnished their lamps. And the foolish said to the wise, give us some of your oil, for our lamps are constantly going out. They would light them and they'd go out. They'd light them again and they'd go out. Light them again and they'd go out. Our lamps are constantly going out. But the wise answered, saying, no, lest there should not be enough for us and you. But go rather those who sell, buy for yourselves. And while they went to buy, the bridegroom came, and those who were ready went in with him to the wedding, and the door was shut. 5 of those attendants left to go buy oil. When they left, the procession came. The bride was picked up. And along with the groom, the royal couple was escorted back to the groom's house. The door was shut and locked, and the festivities began. Well, afterward, verse 11 says, the other virgins, the 5 foolish that weren't there when the bridegroom came, the other virgins came also saying, Lord, Lord, open to us. These were friends of the bride. Groom would have known them. We've had several weddings here in the last 6 weeks. I dare say that most of the grooms knew something about the attendants of the bride. But the groom answered and said, verse 12, assuredly I say to you, I do not know you. And with that story, Jesus echoed again the warning. Watch therefore, for you know neither the day nor the hour in which the Son of Man is coming. I want you to know, this is not what it's about. I want you to know this is coming to an end. And I want you to know we don't know when it will be. But we must be ready for when it happens. What if I'm not ready? You ever contemplated that? Watch. Be ready. Watch. What if I'm not? Three very brief observations. Number one, if I'm not ready when Jesus comes, I will be terrified. And I will have a right to be. I'm saying if I'm not ready. If I'm ready, nothing that I say from this point on has any application to you other than make sure you stay that way. But if I'm not ready, I will be terrified when the end of time comes. I want you to go back with me to verse 8 of this passage. It's the foolish said to the wise, "Give us some of your oil, for our lamps keep on going out." Now the word that is translated "give" is in the imperative. That means it manifests a sense of urgency. The five foolish say to their wise counterparts, "It's crucial that you give us some of yours." Sense the panic in their voice. These five in the story are not ready and they are terrified. "You got to help us out here." And they didn't get the help. I want you to know that when Jesus comes, if you're not ready, you will know terror like never before. And here are some reasons why. Number one, there'll be a revelation of your secrets. Everything that you have kept from anybody and everybody else will know. Because God will judge the secrets of men according to the gospel. Romans 2:16. That's frightful. If I have sinful things in the skeletons in the closets of my life. Number two, there will be a decision of Jesus that I will not want to hear. "For when the Son of Man comes in His glory and all the angels with Him, then shall be brought before Him all the nations, and He will separate them one from another, as the shepherd separates the sheep from the goats." You know what He says to those on the right? "Come, you blessed." Do you remember what He says to those on the left? "Depart from me, you cursed." A decision will be made by Jesus. Now, some of us are going to try to argue with Jesus. And we're going to try to use our religion for leverage. "Lord, Lord, did we not prophesy in your name? Do many mighty works in your name?" We're going to hear Him say, "Depart from me, you worker of iniquity. I never knew you." Some of us may not argue with Him, but we want to step up and say, "Okay, now, if I've got to go to your left, I see that, but now you explain to me why. You tell me I didn't do this. Now you explain to me, when did I not do this?" Well, when you didn't do it to others, you didn't do it to me. We're going to hear a decision from Jesus we don't want to hear. Number three, we will know the indignation of a God we have spurned. He will judge men according to their deeds, Romans 2 says. And it says that those who have been self-seeking, man, I don't like that, but that's what it says. To those that have been self-seeking and obeyed not the truth, but obeyed unrighteousness, what will be theirs? Indignation and wrath. The indignation of a God that I have spurned, I will have to face if I'm not ready. Number four, there'll be the tribulation of a fire that is never extinguished. "Depart from me, you cursed, into everlasting fire prepared for the devil and his angels." And number five, there will be the perdition of being lost forever. Jesus bore reference to his apostles and said, none are lost, except the son of perdition. Lost, perdition. The perdition of knowing, I'm lost, and I will never, ever be able to do anything about it. Oh, when it comes to an end, I'll be terrified if I'm not ready. And I'll have a right to be. When the end of time comes and Jesus makes his entrance back into the universe that is about to be destroyed, if I'm not ready, I'll be on the outside. These five foolish virgins went off, bought more oil, came back. And verse 10 says, while they went to buy, the bridegroom came, and those who were ready went in with him to the wedding, and the door was shut. I want you to see, the door did not accidentally close. Oh, no, 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 no. I want you to see, the door did not automatically fasten by some electronic mechanism. The door was purposefully shut. The word that is translated shut there is used in the book of Luke, for example, in reference to a father who locks in his family for safety at night. It's used in the book of Acts for a jailer who locks the cell door and secures his prisoners. Even so here, the bridegroom locks the door and secures everyone on the inside from everyone else that is on the outside. And if I'm not ready when Jesus comes, guess where I'm going to be? In 2 Thessalonians chapter 1, we read beginning with verse 7, you that are afflicted rest with us at the revelation of the Lord Jesus from heaven with the angels of His power in flaming fire, who will render vengeance to those who know not God and obey not the gospel, who will suffer punishment, everlasting destruction. Watch this. From the presence of the Lord and from the glory of His might. Literally, who will suffer destruction, punishment, away from the presence of the Lord and away from the glory of His might. Paraphrased, they're going to suffer punishment, everlasting destruction on the outside. We'll not be able to knock on the pearly gates and say, Lord, Lord, let us in, because we're going to be escorted to where Jesus is not. We're going to be sent to where God refuses to be. In all of His omnipresence and in His omniscience, He says, I will not go there. I will not see that. I will not listen to those there. I'll be on the outside crying for mercy to someone that refuses to even know I exist anymore, because he will give no attention to the outside. All the more reason to be terrified. Well, last of all, in this story, if I'm not ready for Jesus coming, I will be denied. In verse 11, the five foolish virgins who were not ready said, Lord, Lord, open to us. The word open translates an imperative, same sense of urgency that we find back with the word give in verse 8. Master, Master, it is crucial that you open to us. You can just hear them. This is, and they give their names. This is, and they give their names. But the master, the bridegroom, says, assuredly. Now I want you to know this. The bridegroom says, I want you to know this. Assuredly, I say to you, I'm talking to you, I don't know you. And the word that he used is in a verb tense that means, I don't know, and I will continue not to know you. I speak to you as a follower of Jesus, just as Jesus were speaking to those who followed him on this occasion. As a follower of Jesus, are you really ready? If so, don't you rejoice? If not, aren't you concerned? Judgment is surely coming. Coming to you and me. We will be judged that morning for all eternity. Some will go to heaven. Others will be denied. Will you be in that number? Standing outside? Standing outside the portals? Standing outside denied? Knowing that with the demons ever you shall abide, never to share the beauties, waiting the sanctified. Oh, what an awful picture, standing outside. What if I'm not ready? Are you? As we stand together and sing.